Three, two, one.
Got him. No, they didn't. Oh, my gracious.
Yep.
How about that?
With the second pick in the 2011 NFL Draft, the Denver Broncos select Von Miller, linebacker, Texas A&M.
He's the greatest ever, huh?
And then I just wanted
when you got all the advantages. Easy.
Welcome to the Aggie War Pod, episode number 2. They let us come back even after our Taco Bell talk the first time. I am Mike Craven, the senior writer for Dave Campbell's Texas Football, joined by my co-host Jay Arnold, former Texas A&M Fighting Aggie defensive lineman. Jay, cobwebs off the first time. How are you feeling for episode number 2?
Oh, man, I'm just ready to dive in. I feel like we got a good flow going in episode 1. Just kind of want to keep the momentum going, right? Keep this thing moving downhill.
Keep the momentum going. First down was successful. Now we just got to get second down out of the way. Before we get going here, please subscribe, rate, all that kind of stuff to podcasts on the Republic of Football Network of Dave Campbell's. We already have the Baylor podcast, the Texas podcast, the Rice podcast up from last week, A&M as well. Obviously, you're listening to it right now. We have Texas Tech, UTSA, and North Texas debuting this week. And we hope to add at least 2 more by the end of spring practice. So we're off and running halfway to all 13 FBS markets. We hope to get all the way there by the start of the football season, at least by this time next year. So we appreciate all the love and support so far. It's been overwhelmingly good. I guess I kind of ignore the bad or just don't seek it out at all. So I only see the good. So we're excited about what's going on right now.
Yeah, there is no bad. There's only constructive criticism that people didn't phrase right.
Yep. That's a good way to put it. If you like the journey, the destination doesn't matter, right? So like, we're going to have fun on the way to wherever this ends up, no matter what, even if we're the only ones listening to it. So I think we're doing good here. We're going to mix it up a little bit. You know, we kind of advertised ourselves as the football and recruiting podcast, and I think that's what will be 98% of the time. But it's March, man. March Madness, the greatest time on earth. I saw something the other day about the most called in days for a what's the snip snip called? I'm drawing a blank there.
The snip snip?
Yeah, you know, vasectomy. A vasectomy. Yes. I obviously have not gotten anywhere near that.
Snip snap.
The 3 most called in days for a vasectomy. Do you have any guesses?
I would say Super Bowl Monday.
Super Bowl time.
The first day of March Madness.
Yep. First 2 days of March Madness. And then the Masters. The Masters is the other one. So we are on one of those days. March Madness is starting. Texas A&M got the 7th seed in the Midwest region. They will face 10 seed Penn State. They are a 3-point favorite. Aggies 25-9 runner up in the SEC Conference Championship game. The cool part here, though, because neither one of us, we can admit, right? We're not huge. You're not a huge college basketball guy. I'm not a huge college basketball guy.
Yeah, in high school, I was a March Madness guy, which is the NCAA wrestling tournament. So not a big basketball guy. But I think March Madness is the one time of year where I do try to tune in to catch a few games because it's just so chaotic, and I love chaos.
I remember growing up, I'd always make fun of the whole, like, I'll wait till the playoffs NBA fan, because I was a pretty big NBA fan growing up around Houston, just being in that area when they were really good with Hakeem Olajuwon and stuff. But I've become that with college basketball. I feel like every single year I watch less and less of college basketball. I blame my soccer fandom. It feels like it's an inverse reaction. Like the more soccer I watch, the less college basketball I watch. Because I'm not somebody, I don't know how you are. I can't watch sports 24 hours, 7 days a week. I have other interests. I just can't do it. So I think soccer has taken the place as basketball of my second favorite sport.
Yeah, it's hard to find the balance. And I also just watch way too many sports. So it's like between motorsport and mixed martial arts and football and hockey and wrestling and rugby and everything else I'm watching, it's just hard to squeeze everything in. So sometimes things are going to end up on the cutting floor. College basketball kind of has, for me at least.
But March Madness is a lot of fun. We talked about in the first episode, we are both gamblers. So March Madness presents an opportunity to mostly lose money, if we're being frank. I would imagine on your side as well. I don't do a lot of winning this time of year because, as we just mentioned, I helicopter in. But it's fun to do the brackets and stuff like that. And for our purposes, the real excitement happens if Texas A&M and Texas win on Thursday, because that will set up a second round matchup between the Longhorns and the Aggies. A&M criminally underrated, underseeded. They should have been a higher seed. I imagine that sometime in that room, there was a discussion about if we could get this second round matchup going. They can't convince me otherwise. I will be excited. We can watch. I will watch Texas and Texas A&M play anything against each other because it's always a lot of fun.
Yeah. I mean, so A&M fans are obviously not thrilled with the seeding. I think A&M was underseeded from the basketball that I've watched and the resumes that I've looked at. I do think that there's perhaps a kernel of truth to the fact that Coach Buzz probably upset the committee a little bit last year with some of his strong words. And I also think there's a kernel of truth to the end of the day that we're trying to get eyes on the TV. Mm-hmm. And a second round matchup with A&M in Texas is going to get eyes on the TV. I mean, I don't think there's any disputing that. So when you look at the resumes, yeah, it's a little bit frustrating as an A&M fan that A&M was seated low compared to some of the other comparable resumes. But at the same time, if you take care of business at the beginning of the season and out of conference, they don't get a chance to kind of give you that shaft that A&M fans feel like they have received.
And of course, last time A&M Texas played in a big time, you know, kind of men's playoff sport, A&M won that game out in Omaha in the College World Series. So it's always just good. I mean, any rivalry where we can add even more stakes to it, always a good thing. I agree with you on the Buzz Williams quote. I mean, everybody's human, right? I don't think anybody likes hearing criticism, especially in the public space. So I do think there's a kernel of truth to those words kind of coming back to bite the Aggies. As a former player, though, I think in all sports, this holds true. Do you like when a coach stands up for the team publicly, even if there's a little bit of repercussions down the road? Would you rather your coach kind of not give anybody press clippings? Like, as a player in the locker room, how do you feel about the coach kind of saying stuff like that?
Yeah, I think you want to have the coach have your back. I think it gives you a little more confidence that in the guy that you're playing for. I tell people this all the time, but generally speaking, coaches are going to say things on camera that are a lot better than what you're going to get in the locker room, right?
Yeah.
They're going to say, you know, we have to go back and work on things. And when you go on film, you're going to get put up on the big screen. And when you make a mistake, they're going to circle you, press play, rewind it, circle you again, press play, rewind it. And you're going to be just highlighted there. Whereas the coach ain't going to throw you in front of the bus or under the bus in the media. By the same token, you want that coach that's going to stand up for you like Buzz did. When last year you think you had a team that should have been playing in the NCAA tournament, it's his job to kind of stump for you.
100%.
And I can't have any complaint as a player seeing a coach say that. And maybe I would have worded it a little bit differently, maybe not have been so vehement about it. But I think as a player, you just kind of appreciate the fact that your coach was willing to go to bat for you.
Yeah. And I think it's a fair point too, because, you know, like as a media member, if a coach messes up, if players mess up, we ask them a bunch of questions, we hold them accountable. We write articles, we talk about them on podcasts, on TV. You know, it's got to be the same for committees and for referees and officials and stuff like that. I would want to play for a coach that had my back and was publicly, you know, maybe your boss doesn't like it. Maybe the AD doesn't like it, the SEC commissioner, those kind of guys. But, you know, you're in it for the players in your locker room. That's who you have to make happy first and foremost. And I think you want to play for a coach that sticks up for you. I think A&M's got a chance here to really give Texas a run for their money. I don't know what the SEC is compared to the Big 12, right? I mean, I don't know how much that matters in a one-off game. But you get Texas A&M in the same gym, you know, on a one game situation. Who knows what happens there? Texas has looked, you know, really good, even without Chris Beard, who's now in the SEC. That first trip, that Ole Miss Texas game is going to get interesting pretty quick. But we should have a Texas team in the Final Four. Like, if you look at the Midwest bracket, You know, Houston's the one seed, Texas is the two seed, A&M there is a seven seed who a lot of people think, you know, should have been better, like a five, maybe even a four seed. So we may have a state of Texas team in the final four out of that bracket, seven Texas teams in the field overall. Baylor's a three seed, I believe. TCU's a six seed. So a lot of Texas flavor. We've kind of become a basketball state quietly. Like, I know we think of Texas as this like football state or whatever, but if we look at national championships, we even look at, you know, high school recruiting and the level of players that we're sticking at. Texas, especially like DFW, really has become a hotbed for basketball talent.
Yeah. I mean, and really I think Texas is just the premier athletic state in the country. I mean, obviously I'm biased here, but you look at baseball as well.
Yeah.
With the history there. I mean, but sticking with basketball, I don't want to completely overlook Penn State either. That's a team that just went to the Big Ten championship. And it's a solid squad. So A&M can't get caught looking ahead to the second round for sure. And in a lot of ways, as bad as A&M may have got it being a seven seed, Penn State getting A&M as their opponent as a 10 seed to the 7 seed, you can't love that draw if you're a Penn State fan either, just because of what A&M, the form that A&M has been to close the season.
That 7-10 matchup always seems to have at least one upset, you know, over the first couple of days. And as you mentioned, I mean, they're only a 3-point favorite, you know, so I tend to go with Vegas on these things. Give me Vegas over the seeds. It feels like Vegas sees this as a pretty close matchup. So, yeah, good point there. Penn State, you know, it's a tough first round matchup, but I think for all us neutrals, you know, all we want is that Saturday, I would imagine, primetime showdown between the Longhorns and the Aggies. So we're looking forward to that. Hopefully that comes true. No, in sports, though, one of those teams will lose and ruin it for all of us, and it'll ruin all of these talking points we've all, not only us, but everywhere in the world has spent the last few days talking about.
Yeah, and I also don't love that the tip-off is at like 8:55 at night. That's well past my bedtime. So I don't know that I'm going to even catch the game.
What is the normal bedtime these days for Jay Arnold?
I'm in bed by like 8:30.
Oh, wow.
Is what I try to be at. Unless it's, you know, it depends on the night of the week. But for the most part, I'm in bed at 8:30 if I'm not doing anything or if I'm not watching UFC fights or some kind of sporting event.
When's the last time you've seen the sun come up?
On the way to work this morning. On the way to the office.
I think getting old is being less impressed with how late people can stay up and more impressed with how early somebody can go to bed. So I am very impressed with your ability to get in bed by 8:30. I'm a 9:30, 10 o'clock guy, and that feels very early for me. I used to be an insomniac. Like in my 20s, early 30s, like I could not go to bed before 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. The pandemic really helped me with that because I was able to just to kind of like find some structure somewhere.
I mean, there were days in college when I was in the morning workout group, had to be up at 5:30, and I was still up at like 1:30 or 2.
Yeah.
And just going in and working out. And I had no problems. If I tried to do that now, I think they would have found me on the corner of Texas University, just like, passed out.
Yeah, I used to do a lot of uppers. I'm 8 years clean, so I cannot do it anymore. But I used to see the sun come up more than I would like to admit. And it is a hollow feeling when you're like in the garage or something like that, as people start jogging by you in the early morning, you know, like when they're working out and you still haven't gone to bed, it will make you reevaluate some things. I'll tell you that. I will say that
when I went to LSU this past year for the LSU Ole Miss game and helped set up the tailgate in the morning before anyone else was even on campus, except for the joggers, it was pretty funny when we're out there drinking beer and getting the food prepped and the tent set up and people are jogging by us. Felt kind of like, well, I guess we have different things that we're striving for.
Yeah. Priorities are different everywhere. I would imagine a game at LSU, this needs to be a podcast topic for the summer. We'll talk about where the best places you've gone to see games at. I've been to a pretty decent amount of games in different spots too. I would imagine at LSU is one of the more enjoyable events in college football.
Yeah, well, I'll save it so that we have plenty to talk about when we do that topic. Yeah. But I think LSU is the best tailgate destination in the nation.
because I went to the Texas LSU Cotton Bowl when Texas still had like Chris Sims, just to date me, but Nick Saban was the head coach of LSU. And that was just at a neutral site bowl game. And LSU was the coolest fan base I've ever been around. Like, they were insane. And so like, I can only imagine. My brother played at Southeastern Louisiana, which is in Hammond. And so like, they're, you know, they're like Texas State to Texas, where they all go to Southeastern Louisiana, but then they, on Saturday, they go to LSU games. So I've heard some stories. I'd imagine that's going to be a good June or July topic there for us. Let's get to some Aggie football here for people who haven't turned it off because of our basketball content. Maybe they just fast forward through the basketball content there if that's not your thing. But let's talk impact newcomers. A&M's going to start spring practice March 20th. Right now it's spring break. Some teams like Texas do a week or two before spring break, take the spring break, and then come after. Texas A&M electing to get those 15 practices all in pretty close to each other. Spring game April 14th, but really get kicked off on the 20th when we come back from spring break. A&M signed 19 signees in the recruiting class out of the prep ranks in a top 15 class, 10 of those early enrollees already on campus, 5 transfers. So there'll be 24 new faces on the scholarship roster, about a fourth of the team, a pretty regular turnover there. Jay, my question to you, and what I want to talk about, out of those 24 new faces, let's start on the offensive side of the ball. Who are you most excited to see? Maybe the better question is, who do you think can have the most impact in 2023?
Yeah, so I'm looking at this a couple ways. One is the position, right? Offensive line, generally, you're not going to have an impact freshman come in as a new recruit. And A&M didn't get any guys coming in on the offensive line as a transfer. So it's not going to be an offensive lineman. But you look at the fact that, you know, Devon Achane is leaving. I think that really opens up a spot for Reuben Owens to possibly be an impact newcomer on offense right away. And then the other guy that I'm looking at offensively is Tyron Smith, the transfer from UTEP, just because of what he was able to do out at El Paso. And I think he could be a guy that maybe is under the radar on some people's expectations, but I think he's his skill set could mesh very well with the Aggies early on.
We don't share notes. Maybe that's something we should start doing on a Google Drive, because I wrote down two names over here so I could talk about the one you didn't mention. First up, Reuben Owens, running back out of El Campo. Second one up, Tywin Smith, wide receiver out of UTEP. We talked about this last week. I would imagine I am the most in-depth UTEP fan you could ever find, right? Like, I watch a lot of UTEP football as a function of my job. I love the city of El Paso. Tyron Smith has been awesome. The last two wide receivers to transfer out of UTEP, Jacob Cowan going to Arizona, had instant success at the Division I Power 5 level. I think Smith's the same way. 71 catches, 1,039 yards, 7 touchdowns, an all-conference USA player. He's a slot guy, and I think Anaya Smith coming back maybe keeps him from having the level of role he may thought he was going to when he first transferred to A&M, when he didn't know if Smith was going to come back or not. But having those two guys be able to work the slot, I think A&M is going to be excellent. Smith can play maybe a little bit as a running back, a kind of a positionless type football, a little bit there with Smith there as well. So I think he's an impact guy. And then Reuben Owens, just as a guy who works at Dave Campbell's, who like has to watch a lot of high school football still to this, like, Owens is legit. Like, he's the black unicorn for a reason. That's his nickname. That's what he likes to go by. He is excellent. He has great balance, vision. I worry about his size, but it's not like A&M is going to ask him to run the ball 25 times a game. And Devon Achane just proved you don't have to be a monster running back and succeed in the SEC. So I think his speed is going to be a big impact for Texas A&M's offense, even if it's just situationally.
Yeah, and I do feel bad that maybe we should have shared notes.
No, it's fine. I'm just joking. Way.
But I guess another guy that we can talk about too is Raymond Cantrell out of Florida, from Milton, Florida. He's a highly rated wide receiver, kind of came in a little bit later in the class, but a little bit of size at 6'2", maybe is a guy to keep an eye on. I think he's just a real natural athlete that could have an impact early on if we're not talking about Reuben Owens and Tyron Smith.
Yeah, I mean, and injuries are going to happen. Guys are going to emerge. You know, dudes get in trouble or something. You know, you never know. You need depth, right? And I think that wide receiver room is pretty good. But to add another body in there that can be an understudy and maybe come out of a shell towards the second half of the season, I think that's big for any team, right? Moving over to the defensive side of the ball, who are you looking for over there?
I mean, I think we know the big name in this class is going to be David Hicks.
Yeah.
He's going to be the obvious one defensively, but there's a pair of transfers come in at the corner position, Sam McCall and Tony Grimes. Both of them were highly recruited athletes. And Grimes as well was kind of flirting with A&M throughout the recruiting process. Mm-hmm. He brings a little bit of a veteran presence, I think, to the secondary there. And obviously the defense has room for improvement. Secondary wasn't really as much of the issue last year, but it'll be good to see, two highly rated transfers come in and compete at those positions.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, A&M led the nation in passing defense last year in terms of yards given up. They're kind of quietly becoming like DBU recently, right? Like that secondary has been excellent. The cornerbacks, the safeties, just a lot of talent. I mean, I do like Texas 10 rankings every single year with like the 10 most, 10 best returning at each position. I feel like once I get to the defensive back, it's all, it's like three Aggies, four Aggies on the list. Antonio Johnson last year, obviously awesome. Jalen Jones going to be another guy that gets picked in the NFL draft. But even losing some of those guys, you look back over at it and you're like, man, Tyreek Chappelle is still there. The safety position's excellent. Bryce Anderson, Damani Richardson's back for like seemingly his 10th year. He's on the Perry Ellis college train. And so I think they're going to be really good at the defensive backs rank. And when you can bring in two guys that are starters, like those are starter level dudes, even in the SEC, you got three really talented cornerbacks. You got three really talented safeties. That's going to be another strong group for A&M.
Yeah. And I think if you can slot somebody over to the nickel spot to replace Antonio Johnson, obviously that's it's a very solid defensive backfield that I think is the strength of A&M. And yet you just kind of add to the strength. I think that's just a win-win for everybody.
I think that's a good point too, because like which one of those guys is most likely to be that nickel heir apparent, right? Like I think Chappelle could be one of those guys, but Tony Grimes is a big dude. So is McCall at 6'1", 182, but Grimes, I remember covering him as a recruit and he's around 200 pounds. He was always fit. He can tackle. He's an aggressive dude. I think he's a guy to watch as a nickel as well, because A&M likes to use that guy as basically a third safety.
And it's a more physical role than maybe nickel has been in the past.
Yeah.
And I think it's like you said, and it gets him in trouble sometimes with his hands. Right. But, I think, in the way A&M uses it, Tony Grimes could be pretty successful there.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the emergence of the tight end has kind of, cause like for a while tight end went out and now it's back in a really heavy way. And that's made that nickel spot a different than it was when the 4-2-5 was created to kind of stop the 4-wide 2-2 air raid split guys.
For sure.
And then David Hicks, before we move on, I mean, Texas A&M was 123rd in rush defense last year. They were not good at getting after the passer either. Adding a dude who's a three technique who can play almost any spot along the defensive line is really good. I wrote the cover story on David Hicks on our Rising magazine, just a quick plug for that magazine as well. I remember asking, you're like 6'5", 290. You've probably been the best athlete on any single field that you've ever been in. Your dad's an excellent coach who's played college football. He's a smart kid. He's got a great smile, personable, all that kind of stuff. I was like, what was the biggest thing? What was the biggest challenge you've ever faced? And like, without changing his expression, he goes, well, I got shot.
Yeah, that'll do it.
Yeah. I was like, yeah, that counts. That counts as a thing that you got over. So a tough kid, obviously. My question to you as a former defensive lineman is, he's not going to get here till the summer. How hard is it to just physically take? I know he's a huge guy who's plenty powerful and all that kind of stuff, but like you're going to get blocked by Bryce Foster your first day on campus, right? Like how different is that and how long do you need to adjust before you're like ready to play some football?
Well, and I can speak to this personally, right? I was a defensive lineman coming in as a true freshman. I ended up getting some playing time. First of all, let me just say David Hicks is a prospect way higher ceiling than I ever had. And I think he's going to be much more of an impact player than I ever was. But you talked about coming in with Bryce Foster and those guys. The offensive line that I came in there and got to practice against day one was Jake Matthews, Cedric Abuehi, Jermaine Ifedi, Jarvis Harrison, and Mike Matthews. So
pretty good.
It is quite an adjustment whenever you get in there and realize that everyone around you is an incredible athlete. You're not just the top guy on the field anymore. With that being said, I think David Hicks is one of those guys that's going to come in and adjust to the work rate of college football pretty quickly. Obviously, being a coach's son, he's going to have a little bit more knowledge of what goes into it. You always like to get guys in the spring if you can. But, I mean, I was a summer guy, and I ended up contributing as a freshman. So, like I said, Hicks is going to be a stud right away. I think he's going to be a contributor immediately, and I think he's already going to have that work ethic installed that he needs to. But as soon as he gets on campus in the summer, he gets in the weight room, I think he's going to impress a lot of people.
He was our number one player in the state. He's the number one DT ranked nationally. I would imagine he's going to get plenty of snaps there for that defense. And not only is his dad a coach, his dad's a former linebacker at Grambling, who was also like a weightlifter, like a professional power lifter, like weightlifter, bodybuilder guy after college. So that family loves the weight room. I don't think he shows up out of shape or anything like that, but there's still an adjustment. You're still an 18-year-old kid playing against grown men who some of them got families and stuff like that. You know, now they're all paying taxes and everything. So there's an adjustment there to be made for sure. Is that why skill position guys tend to be the quickest on the field, is they don't have to deal with just the physical brutality of some of the other positions?
I think that's part of it. And it's also just the speed that you have, the speed of the game is going to change, but the speed you have as a skill position guy, I think is always going to be part of your game. And it's not necessarily as much of an adjustment.
Right.
I think
fast is fast.
And like you said, adding on the weight, those are things that you can play and be a contributor at skill positions easily, even without having the weight to necessarily be an effective blocker or an effective defensive lineman plugging your gap. There are certain things that you just have to be bigger. When you're playing in the trenches, I mean, taking on a double team with guys, like I was saying, like with the size of Jermaine Ifedi and Cedric Obuehi, that's just a different level of double team coming at you than you're ever going to be used to in college. And you need more mass to be able to do that, handle those situations right away.
And then I know the transfer portal wasn't as prevalent when you were around, probably not as many new guys coming in that way. I know you never transferred, but like, is there also, what's the adjustment of just being the new guy on the team? Like what's the adjustment like for guys like Tony Grimes? What is that like for them?
Yeah. I mean, obviously it's a very competitive environment anyway. So you're coming in with new freshmen and guys that have already been in there. And then there's always a little bit of tension just because everybody wants to be that starter.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you're also all athletes trying to work towards the same goal. The adjustments happen pretty quick. I mean, you know who's going to end up on the field. There's going to be competition, and there's going to be some hard feelings at the end of the day when somebody misses out. But it's not like, oh, there's a new kid here. Like, what is this guy doing? Everybody pretty much knows, hey, you're here to do a job. It's more like adjusting to a new face in the workplace than anything.
Yeah. And I guess as a player, you know who's better and who's not too, right? Like, I mean, you see it every single day. So you know if you should be starting or if you shouldn't be starting.
Yeah. It's knowing who's better than also who studied the playbook, right?
Right.
That's maybe an underrated aspect that we don't talk about enough, even defensively. Like, you got to get in the playbook, know what your role is, because you will get highlighted on film the first time you make a mistake.
You know, and then the portal, you know, again, it's been a relatively new thing. I mean, I got, you know, guys could transfer for all time, but you had to sit out a year. So it was less prevalent back in your day, back in my day. But I think so far we're seeing that offensive transfers sometimes can struggle. But defensive transfers have been pretty instant impact. Like, it's a little bit easier, it seems like, to come in as a defensive guy and play. I think to your point, that could be playbook stuff, right? Like, it's a little bit harder to work your way into like being the wide receiver than maybe the corner.
Yeah, and it's the difference between offense and defense being proactive versus reactive, right?
Sure.
As a defense, you're going to be a lot more reactive. The impact that you have or what a play call is going to be simple for the most part. I mean, there's some blitzes that you're going to have to get into, but you're looking at the guy across from you or your assignment more than you are having to really dive into a route tree.
Sure.
Not to say that defense can't be complex, but I just think that offenses tend to be a little bit more difficult to learn. And obviously there's going to be differences in terminology as well, but I mean, cover three is cover three.
Yeah.
Man is man. Like when you look at offenses, I feel like there's just so many different words for a given route or a given run concept that change based on where you are. Whereas I feel like you can get into a defensive playbook, and once you learn the terminology for a certain coverage or a certain assignment, you can make that adjustment pretty quickly.
And it does feel like defenses rotate a little bit more. So like, even if you're not like a quote unquote starter, you're going to play a little bit more. It's harder to be labeled a bust right on defense, 'cause you're going to get some stats and stuff like that as a transfer. That's an excellent point though. You talked about like just the offensive terminology and how quick that can change. Well, A&M's got a new offensive coordinator. So like, what do we think that adjust? How much of spring is just learning the new words, right? Learning the new language. How much is out there going and executing?
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of learning new terminology, because I mean, even when I only played under Mark Snyder when I was at A&M, but I sat in on a few of the meetings as I was in the process of getting my medical hardship for my shoulder when John Javis came in. And I mean, even that was just a ton of new terminology. And like I said, offensive playbooks are going to be bigger than defensive playbooks.
Yeah.
So the amount of new terminology and new concepts and new plays that the offense is going to have to learn is going to be even greater than anything that we would have experienced defensively.
All right. We also want to talk about more than just football, right? Like I thought this would be a fun idea. I wanted to talk to you about Texas A&M traditions. 'Cause as we know, Aggies and their traditions, a pretty tight end group. Yeah, the Venn diagram is pretty close to a circle there, right? Y'all love traditions. I'm an outsider, went to UTSA, did not go to A&M. So I kind of, from an outsider perspective, wanted to go through some of the traditions and get your thoughts as an insider of what to expect, or maybe like just more of a layman's description of what they are, because some of these feel very secret.
Okay. Some of them I may not know. I'm not the best Aggie. I have been referred to as a 2%er before.
Okay.
I'm still a diehard A&M fan, but I may have to adjust your standing or your belief in me as an Aggie.
Okay. All right. Well,
depending on how I do.
Maybe we'll learn together. We'll learn together through this process. Fish camp. Let's start at number one, right? what was your experience of fish camp?
So as an athlete, I did not go to fish camp.
Oh, well, okay. Well, how's that work?
Yeah. So, we were going through, summer at the, in the weight program. Mm. So we didn't really have the option of going to fish camp. I don't know what all goes on at fish camp. I hear that's like the indoctrination. Maybe that's why I don't know all the traditions as much.
Right. We're starting to get to where the 2% comes from. You didn't go to fish camp.
Exactly. They did have like some of the fish camp counselors come talk to us and teach us like a couple of things at the Bright Complex.
That's great.
While we were kind of getting ready during 2 days. But yeah, our fish camp experience is very limited as athletes.
Have you ever been to Palestine, Texas?
I have driven through.
Okay.
I have not stopped in Palestine.
Okay. Their press box has excellent food. East Texas high school press boxes, far and away the best food, because they don't get, they don't just go to like Golden Chick or, you know, Chick-fil-A or like, it's just somebody makes food. Like, I feel like for most East Texas press boxes, there's just people bringing like homemade mac and cheese and barbecue and like whatever else they made they have really good popcorn. Adrian Peterson, one of the best high school football players I've ever seen. And that's what I will always think of as Palestine, Texas.
I mean, I wouldn't be mad if I got some Chicken Express.
No, it's not bad. It's not bad.
That wouldn't be terrible.
It's not bad, but I can get Chicken Express anywhere. I sometimes can't get home cooked food, right? And as a single man on the road a lot, any type of like homemade anything, it was a very good thing back in those days.
Definitely understand that.
Where is your Aggie ring? Oh, look at that. See that, what that, a 2%er wouldn't be wearing it.
That's I pretty much always wear this unless I'm doing something that would be in a body of water, in which case I am not taking it anywhere close to the body of water. The ring stays on for the most part. It's That's one of the traditions that obviously, like, when you're getting pitched as a recruit to come to A&M, the Aggie ring is going to be a selling point. Mm. They always take in, they talk about how once you get out in the real world, when you're done playing football, you run into somebody with an Aggie ring and they introduce themselves and talk about their class year. It's like, oh, I saw your ring. I mean, that's a real thing that happens. And, you know, it's joke about it. It's like, oh, you're wearing a class ring. Like, but it's a big part of the Aggie network. And I actually appreciate the ring quite a bit. That's one of the traditions that I enjoy.
I think this is a product of going to a directional school that was opened in 1969, but I never understood the class ring thing. My dad wears his T ring everywhere. He was a reserve tight end for Texas, you know, when he was in college in the 80s, and he wears his T ring. And I just never even thought about it. I don't even know if UTSA gives that. I have no idea. I didn't even go to graduation. I don't know. I got my diploma in the mail. This is why I wanted to go through this, because I am not, I don't have any experience with college tradition. Like, we didn't even have a football team at UTSA when I was there. Right. So like, I went to mostly just like class sometimes, you know what I mean? But there wasn't this like feel of university. The next one on my list I wanted to mention, because it is my favorite part of the A&M campus. And I don't know if students really care about this as much, but the Century Tree, I think, is like one of the coolest things. Do you plan on proposing under the Century Tree? Like, what's your idea here?
Yeah, I'm an Aggie dating an Aggie, so
okay.
The Century Tree is definitely prominently figured in perhaps future plans, but I don't want to dive into it too much.
Yeah. Don't spoil anything. But have y'all walked through the tree? Have y'all walked under the tree together yet?
We haven't. We probably need to make a point of that at some point.
Because I've always heard that if you do that, that means you're together forever. So maybe you want to wait on that. I don't know. I don't want to put anything into your thing. I'm a divorce guy. So sometimes my cynicism pops out.
No, it's a really cool tradition. And, you know, you'll see, I mean, I've going to A&M, I've seen a few proposals under the tree myself that I didn't know were going to happen, and people I didn't know, seen strangers, but it's fun to watch people stop and participate in that tradition.
Have you ever placed a penny on the base of the Sol Ross statue?
I have not.
Okay.
I was not one that subscribed to the luck on tests, mostly because I didn't start setting till the night before, and it didn't really leave me much time to walk by the statue to put a penny on. I was studying up until the very last minute. So I like to say that I got by on my own and I didn't need any luck from a statue.
And then another one I wanted to ask you, and I didn't know about the fish camp thing, but this may be the exact same thing. Did you go to a midnight yell practice? Were y'all allowed to go to midnight yell practices the day before games?
No,
I didn't think so. Yeah.
So I have been to midnight yell at the Stockyards in Fort Worth. And then also, they did a midnight yell at a Chewy's in Birmingham before A&M played Alabama.
Nice.
But I've never been to a midnight yell on campus. I've only been to midnight yells at away games.
What's up with that? I mean, you've been graduated for a while now. How are you not? We, for a podcast, we need to both go to a midnight yell, maybe before like the Bama game or something.
Yeah, the issue is I always go to Northgate on Friday night before, and I tell myself that I'll make it to midnight yell. And sure enough, it gets close to midnight and I'm still at Northgate, and I realize that I do not want to walk onto campus and go to midnight yell. So the practice eludes me. Maybe one of these days I'll skip Northgate and actually go to midnight yell.
That feels like a tale as old as time. Like that's probably something that's happened to many an Aggie for many a years there in College Station.
I have to imagine that it's a little bit of an epidemic.
You ever get sick of the song? You know what I mean? The Aggie Warhead, like, I feel like it's like Rocky Top for Tennessee, right? I know a couple guys who played for Tennessee, and they'll admit that like sometimes they'd like to hear a different song. You ever want to just request a different song?
Honestly, like with Aggie Warham, I don't think it's overplayed as much as like Rocky Top or Boomer Sooner. Like those,
yeah, I feel Boomer like those Sooner's two songs, bad too. Boomer Sooner's I bad feel
like
too.
They get played. I mean,
yeah,
not just like at the fourth quarter at the start of the game, but like throughout the game. Like it is a constant peppering of Boomer Sooner or Rocky Top. I will say that I have been like, since A&M's band only plays military numbers, I've been trying to get an institute a new practice where A&M's band plays El Degüello from the Alamo, right? It was Spanish for slit throat, and Santa Ana had his troops play that before they decided to kill everybody at the Alamo. But I thought that would be really fun and intimidating to play at the start of the fourth quarter for A&M's band. Sadly, they have not listened to my proposal.
Well, it didn't really turn out very well for old Santa Ana. I mean, maybe on that day it did. But you know, the larger, we just celebrated that, right? You know?
Yeah. I think it was Independence Day.
Yeah. We're big on that here. We're pro Texas Independence Day on Aggie War podcast. I need to get that out after the slit throat reference there.
We have to be. It's Republic of Football.
That's right. It's the Republic of Football. We didn't make that out of nowhere. Do you say good bull?
I do say good bull on occasion. I probably not as much as, and it also depends on the company I'm in.
Sure.
Right. Like again, around Aggies, definitely more likely to say good bull, especially when I'm back on campus.
I think it's a great phrase. I wish I could adopt it. I know that I'm not supposed to say it, right? It's like the whoop thing, right? You're not allowed to do it unless you're like, you know, an Aggie of a certain ilk or whatever. But I love the phrase good bull. I think that's tremendous. I didn't know that was like an Aggie phrase forever. But I think it's tremendous. I am a big fan of the good bull.
It's one of the better sayings, I think.
And then this is last for me. Who was the best 12th man you ever played with?
That's tough.
Thank you. Hard hitting capital J stuff here.
I played with I guess I should really say I only played with one 12th man, but another guy that became the 12th man after I stopped playing.
Gotcha.
And was somebody that is probably the most well-known 12th man in recent history, Colin Gillespie.
Yeah.
But I mean, Sam Miller was pretty damn good whenever he was the 12th man as well. He had some big plays. I guess I have to say, you know, with Colin actually getting the touchdown in the bowl game against NC State, I think I have to give him the nod here.
How is that given out? How is that determined? Is that just a coach thing? Is there a player? Like, how does that work?
Yeah. So, I mean, he has to be a walk on whenever it's granted. And
right.
I think it's the coaching staff, but I'm not sure. We may have voted on it. I don't know. It's been a long time, and I took a lot of knocks to the head in those days.
Yeah. What is the – oh, sorry. I had one more. Oh, the howdy. Do you rely on howdy?
So I do use howdy whenever I'm in A&M, but I've been watching this Australian YouTuber for a while, and it's slowly kind of morphed into hi again. And that's just pretty much what I say is a greeting nowadays, unless I'm back in Aggieland and reminded that howdy is the official greeting of Texas A&M.
Yeah. I mean, I'm country, so I just thought that was just how people greeted each other. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know how that got co-opted to a College Station thing. But I just remember, just as a media guy walking around camp, you know, you hear howdy or whatever, and you just say howdy back, but I don't know if I'm breaking any rules. It's like walking on, there's a lot of rules at Texas A&M. I think that's my issue, right? It's like, I never know what grass, like how I can walk, where I can walk, what's going on.
Well, the MSC grass is the grass that you don't walk on.
Okay.
The building that you, you take your hat off before you enter. It was, so the other podcast that I do that's college football related, the Get Back Coach with my buddy Jake, he came down from Penn State. And we've joked that it's the cultural exchange with an emphasis on cult because of the programs. But taking him to the MSC for the first time, and like, you know, you go through and the grass is a living memorial. That's why you don't step on the grass.
Okay.
And taking through the Medal of Honor recipients wing. I mean, it's a pretty cool experience.
See, I'm already learning something because I just thought it was like just the grass on campus. So I've been walking sidewalks and like avoiding walking through grass in College Station for like 30 years now.
Yeah. Well, my baseball coach in high school, we weren't allowed to walk on the grass.
It's not a bad rule, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, you know, a lot of work goes into lawn care, so it's not a terrible rule. But yeah, the MSC grass is the only grass I think that's actually you're not supposed to walk on. I will say that you probably shouldn't walk on the grass at the golf course either. You might get hit. So
there you go.
Those are the two.
There you go. There you go. I don't know. Like, I sometimes wish I had gone to like a big school because of like just the traditions on it. But then other times it's like, man, that's just like a lot. I don't know. I enjoyed the like anonymity on like a UTSA campus, right? Like you just went to class, you left. There wasn't a whole lot of, you know, group functions. That I think it's changed now because football can bring a campus together in a way that other things can't. But when I was at UTSA, you saw as many A&M shirts as you saw UTSA shirts. We just did not have traditions like that. I mean, I guess it was a new school as well.
Yeah, and I mean, Traylor also has put a pretty big emphasis on San Antonio's.
That's true.
UTSA.
Yeah, the 2-1-0 triangle of toughness and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, I mean, I think it is changing. I think winning obviously helps. But just having something that you can do together as students, like the midnight yell or going to football games or having fish camp, any of that kind of stuff to bring you, it can sound hokey from the outside, but I think it is something that keeps people around 20, 30, 50, 60 years later, because you got a real tie to campus in a way that I just don't at my college.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, like you said, to football too. I mean, it's especially in like San Antonio. I mean, I feel like that city was really hungry for football. So that's kind of maybe up the environment of it. But I mean, like you said, if you can get a group of people to all rally behind a certain cause, you're going to get massive gatherings and have a little bit more enthusiasm. So I think it's definitely part of why A&M is so special.
My favorite part of A&M games, my favorite is like when they start locking arms and they start swaying, right? Because I am normally in the press box and I swear to you, I know this is probably said other places, it rocks, it shakes. Like you go back and forth up. And I don't know if everybody knows this, but A&M's press box is higher than anywhere else in the state. NRG, the Houston Texans press box and Texas A&M are the highest ones in the state. I can be a little bit scared of heights. And you get up that thing and it starts swaying. Like, what does that feel like? What does it feel like from the stand, like from the actual state, like in the field?
Yeah. So on in the field, it's kind of just wild to look up and see that sway. It's almost hypnotizing, watching the motion. And, you know, I've talked to guys from other teams and like after the game and they're kind of just blown away by watching it. And they're like, yeah, dude, like we stopped on our sideline and looked up at it. 'Cause it was crazy to see.
I couldn't imagine being a kicker.
Yeah,
it was like a free throw, you know, like when they start doing stuff behind the basket.
If they started doing that during field goals and extra points, that would probably be a little bit unfair. But thankfully for the kickers, they don't.
Yeah, you get motion sickness back there.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, I almost get motion sickness up in the stands, especially when you're like at the very top. Whenever the sauna off began swaying back and forth, that gets a little bit sketchy.
That's what I'm saying. You're up there in the press box and you're like worried. You're like, I mean, I need to see the zoning stuff on that. Like, I need to see the last time this thing has passed an inspection because I know it's been up there for a long time. It starts swaying. That actually brought up a thing I wanted to ask you about. What was that experience like the first time you got to just go to an Aggie football game as a fan, not as a player, but just as like somebody going that got to participate in some of this stuff that, as you mentioned, as a football player, you just got so much going on. You're just not a normal student. You can't do all that stuff all the time.
Yeah. So this is a weird one because I've never actually sat in the student section at A&M. Because even when I like stopped playing and had my medical, since I was still on scholarship, I still got tickets to the game.
Right.
But my tickets were like by the recruits and the families. So I was always on the home side. The closest I've gotten to being among the students is kind of in the south end zone. And even then it's still not quite the student section. And, you know, obviously student sections are their own animal, but it was still just kind of so really cool to go to a game and saw them off and watch everything happen. But I'll be honest with you, the best part is being able to tailgate before the games.
There is plenty to do before, and it's pretty now too. Like they've really done a great job.
Which I'll be the new Aggie Park, which is the new kind of tailgating setup, is just gorgeous.
Top notch.
I mean, it's fantastic. I'll be there in May. There's a big barbecue and music festival going on. Called Troubadour Fest that's in Aggie Park. And man, I can't wait to experience that there. But I mean, just being able to like kind of eat food and mingle with people and chat at the tailgate before the game, before going into the stadium. It's just a completely different animal than sitting in the locker room with your nerves, going over assignments and basically trying to get ready to go to battle out there on the field. I mean, it's just a completely different mindset. I will say that though, sometimes during the games, it's more stressful to watch as a fan because you have no control whatsoever over the outcome. Yeah. Once you get into the game as a player, the adrenaline's going and you're just focused on your assignment. As a fan, you're like, oh my, like, what am I looking at here? Halftime, I'm tempted to just jump over the barriers and yell at the defensive line.
so you immediately became the fan that was like, call the touchdown play. You know what I mean? Like you like immediately went from player to like the guy that you probably hated behind you at like high school games your whole life.
No. I didn't get that bad. It's all internalized for me.
Okay.
Just because I am so used to that guy that you're talking about. That's just constantly screaming, get him every time you're on defense or run the damn ball. Every time you're on offense,
unless it doesn't work. And then it was like, why did you run the ball again? Everybody could have seen that coming.
Yeah, exactly. I have internalized all those feelings thanks to the years of trauma inflicted by the fans behind me.
Yeah. Mine's from just being in the press box. Like I can't even like imagine sitting in the stands around like the normal folk anymore and like listening to all that kind of stuff. Cause like it has to be silent or it's at least supposed to be. There's some places that that allow more cheering in a press box than you would imagine, but especially in the SEC. I like the solace of it. You're right. To where like, even as a fan at home, I'm a pretty quiet sports watcher because I'm just used to not being able to like express what I'm feeling on the inside, except for soccer. When I'm watching like Liverpool soccer, I become as close to like a fanatic as anything in the world.
And I don't know if you like go to the pub to watch Liverpool or if you're watching at home, but like when I go to watch Tottenham games, there's something just infectious about everybody yelling.
Right. Yeah. Something about soccer.
I don't even know what I'm yelling half the time. Yeah. I'm just like screaming at the ref or whoever made a mistake. And I think you're right. There's something about soccer.
I think also it's something about not knowing all of the intricacies to the sport, right? Like somebody starts yelling something in a football game and I'm not a former college football player, but I've been around it enough to where I'm like, well, you couldn't throw it to that guy because the safety's over the top. You know, I can explain why the thing couldn't happen, but like in soccer, I never played it. So I'm just like, put the ball into the freaking net, like just shoot the ball, you know,
and stop like, making turnovers.
Exactly. Just do the score thing, you know, and score more than the other team and don't let them kick it into the net. I mean, it's a very simple game. From the outside. So, that'll do us for episode two. We're through two.
Yeah. We only got derailed with a little bit of the other football talk at the end.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if somebody's hanging in for 40 minutes, we deserve five, you know, for ourselves there at the end.
Exactly. I think it's a little bonus that some people appreciate as well.
I think that's the hardest part about podcasting is trying to find the balance between how much just like in-depth sports talk topic talk that you do. And then how much just kind of like fluff personality accessory stuff that you do to kind of keep it fun. And the great podcasts find a balance of those two, at least the ones I like, maybe I'm just projecting what I enjoy in a podcast.
Yeah. I mean, I think if the person you're listening to is having fun, you're having fun.
Right.
That's what's important.
Right. I have the voice though, that sounds like I'm never having fun. You know, it's been a problem of mine my whole life. Like, I think the most frequent question I'm asked in life is like, what's wrong?
We'll have to get you some like Gus Johnson enthusiasm on the podcast.
I do not have that level of energy. I joke, I don't think there's anything that I'm as excited about as like Gus Johnson is like on an October Saturday, just calling play. Like, I just can't imagine. I would be so tired. Like, how do people have that kind of energy? Like, I just don't have it.
It's WWE announcers are the ones that like are wild to me because you know the outcome and you still have to have that kind of crazy, like every moment's at the edge of your seat excitement.
That's what makes Pat McAfee so good and just like so annoying at the same time, because it's like that has to be fake. Like, you can't have that amount of energy. Is that how he orders food? Like, he goes to Whataburger and that's just how he talks to people?
I am a big Pat McAfee fan, and I would not be surprised if that's just how he is 100% of the time.
That's amazing. Cause Gus Johnson's like that. Like you talk to Gus Johnson, it's just like, you know, talk, and he's like that excitable. And you're like, wow, he doesn't turn it off. This is genuine. I think that's why Gus gets a pass. I guess Pat may be that kind of guy, but it feels, I guess as somebody who's an intro, it feels manufactured because I can't imagine having it. But I think that's just speaking my own problems into existence there.
And I definitely feel you on that. I go through stages. I can't imagine doing it as often as those guys do it, but I appreciate it. I love having that energy brought to it. It helps me get fired up as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's entertainment. Sports is supposed to be fun, right? Thursday, Friday, what are you doing for the first two rounds of the tournament? Like, you gotta go to job? Have you come up with your job excuse yet? How does this work for you?
I will just be watching on my computer at work, and you know, if anybody has a problem with it, I'll just click off of it real quick to get out of trouble. But I can't help but tune into sports whenever I'm at work. It's just too much of a part of who I am.
Thursday night, late tip off, 8:55, I believe, Central Time, something like that. What's Jay Arnold drinking? What's Jay Arnold eating during a game?
Yeah, so for a Thursday night game, I will probably have a glass of water by my bedside table, and I will be listening to it until I fall asleep. Okay. I 8:55 is a little
so bit. So this is no go for you. There's no chance you're getting through this whole game.
We'll see how it goes. I'm really hoping that like one team or the other jumps out to a massive lead and I can in good conscience just kind of call it a night.
There you go. There you go.
But yeah, I mean, 8:55 is just it's a little bit late for me.
I'll be drinking a Dr. Pepper. I'll be drinking Dr. Pepper because I'll need the caffeine.
Yeah. If it was like a Friday night game, I would be staying up. Yeah. But Thursday night, I just can't justify it.
You got early mornings, huh? You were saying you're in the car on the way to work and you saw the sunrise come up. I think we got different morning routines.
Yes, I'm in the office at 7 every morning.
Oh my gosh. What's an office?
Do what?
I said, what's an office? Office?
Yeah. It is a very dark, depressing place that people gather in their misery because misery loves company. That's an office for you.
I never worked in an office until I got to Dave Campbell's and they moved me to Dallas for a year. I say I did a 1 year bid up in Dallas in the office. And I had never gotten to sitcom The Office until I like actually went to an office all the time. And then I started watching The Office and now it is much funnier than it was to me because I just didn't get the dynamics of it, but I never want to go back. They let me move back to Austin. I go up there maybe twice a month, if that, show my face, but yeah, I am not an office person. I don't understand why we need to gather together to work. Maybe it's because I'm in an industry to where you can tell if somebody's working or not because there's like a story out or there's not a story out. You don't really need to check anybody's work. But I've just never understood the idea of an office.
I like a little bit of a hybrid action for myself.
Yeah, hybrid's probably like the best.
Seeing somebody every once in a while to kind of get the ideas generated that maybe you don't get when you're not having the person next to you. But other than that, yeah, I would like to be able to work from home too.
Yeah. My office is like practices and press conferences and games and stuff. I see plenty of people that way. I don't need the other stuff, even though I like my coworkers. I've always liked my coworkers. It's just, I don't need to see them all the time. We talked last episode. I don't need to see my own family on Thanksgiving, right? I don't need to see my coworkers at the office, but I'm going to be at a couple spring practices. I'll probably be at the first one next week. Maybe we can get together, go to the spring game, figure something out there as mid-April comes about. But we're going to be doing this every single Monday. We'll record it Monday night. It'll be out Tuesday morning, Tuesday afternoon at the latest. We appreciate all the feedback so far, positive and negative. Let us know what you want us to talk about, what we should talk about less of, what we should talk about more of. Less me, more Jay, I'd imagine. And then, you know, just what topics we want to do from there. But we're excited. Like next week, we'll actually have like real football. I mean, kind of real football to talk about. There will be helmets hitting other helmets. And that's always a good thing.
Depends on who you ask. But yes. yeah, you know, like you were saying, I mean, we love to hear from y'all, everyone, what y'all want us to talk about. Criticism. Make sure you give the Twitter a follow at Aggie War Pod to make sure that we stay up to date. We're going to update that with announcements. You know, if any kind of big breaking news happens, we may end up doing an emergency pod. So we'll see what happens as the season goes on or as the spring goes on. But looking forward to keeping this going.
I think something we want to start doing, or at least something I've thought about doing, is like kind of doing it. We need to get like three or four questions from like social media and do just kind of like a hashtag Ask Jay type situation here, where fans can kind of write in questions about either your playing career or whatever, barbecue, current Aggies, whatever. But yeah, we're just trying to have fun. This is for y'all, right? So like, just let us know what you want to listen to, what you don't want to listen to. Please rate, subscribe, all that kind of stuff, and hate listen to the other podcast. You know what I mean? We got a Texas podcast there that you can listen to make fun of me for what I say on that one as well. So we got it. We got everything for you. TexasFootball.com. We're not just a magazine. I feel like I have to tell that to everybody still. We're not just a magazine. We're doing stuff digitally. So please check us out there. For Jay Arnold, for Mike Craven, Dave Campbell's Texas Football, we will talk to you next week.